From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for April 9th, 2021. The Bucks are finally back home, but just for tonight, and they're on the road the rest of the week. And the Brewers are spending the weekend in St. Louis with the Cardinals. A North Carolina cop who got free coffee every day from his local Starbucks spilled coffee on himself. So naturally, he sued for $750,000. The jury ruled in favor of Starbucks. The cop doesn't get the $750K. And more importantly, no more free coffee. Remember, no good deed goes unpunished. Speaking of the police, the cash-strapped town of North Jersey has recommended that the cops write 30,000 more tickets per year to make up for the budget shortfall. I'm sure this news will be great for tourism. And one more cop story. In Italy, the cops arrested a gangster who's been on the lam for 7 years. So how did they find him? They recognized him from his cooking show on YouTube. This could only be better if his name was Fredo. Let's talk politics, he says tentatively. In India, a candidate for a legislative seat is making some amazing campaign promises. If elected, you will get free robots to do your housework, free helicopters for everybody, and best of all, free trips to the moon. Sounds like he's already taken a few too many trips. And finally, this is taking recycling to a whole new level. The state of Maine may now soon allow Viking funeral pyres. You know, you place the body in a wooden boat, set the boat on fire, and send it out to sea. The boat sinks to the bottom, the corpse is fish food, and you participate in a ritual named after a lousy football team. On the podcast today, we have Brian Kilb, Paige Ratke, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks as always, Max. A good week overall for the markets. The NASDAQ up 3.1% today, closing at the bell at 13,900. The S&P 500 up 2.7% today, closing at the bell at 4,129, continuing to test new all-time highs there. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average closing today at the bell at 33,803. That's up 2% for the week. For the year, the NASDAQ now up 8%, the S&P up 10.3%, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 11%, all those numbers including dividends. For the year, the 10-year U.S. Treasury has moved from 0.92 where it began the year up to 1.67 where it ended the week. That's down slightly for the week, but we have seen the yield on the 10-year Treasury stabilize a bit now over the past couple of weeks after what had been a pretty abrupt move higher for much of the first quarter. And that's a quick look at the week. You know, Brian, I think as we jump off here, we spend so much of our time, it seems, talking about what's going on today, what's going on this week, what's going on this month. And certainly plenty of developments continue on the pandemic front. Plenty of developments continue in terms of infrastructure spending, in terms of, what the market is doing. I think, you know, what we want to spend more of our time on today is maybe not that part of it, but just as a jumping off point, what kinds of things, you know, are you talking to clients about right now in terms of what's important in the markets, in terms of, what you're seeing out there? And then I think, you know, we can get that out of the way and talk about some of the more important things for investors, which is what does the long term look like?
Well, I think first of all, it's, you know, you got to stop and take a deep breath and kind of be grateful, I think, for what we've accomplished in a year. And we've been talking about vaccines and getting past this thing. And now we're kind of here, you know, with 40% of the country vaccinated and other parts of the world, you know, ahead in some cases, behind in others. But, we have literally the light at the end of the tunnel in that respect. A lot of discussion this week about second half of the year growth in the economy. You can kind of feel it now, right? It isn't something we're talking about. You can see some momentum in some of the data. Joel, we can talk later, but a lot of very interesting data points I thought this week. We can kind of sift through the tea leaves on that. But I do think, you know, you got a year ahead of us where we have some significant growth built into our forecasts. Stock market prices reflect that growth. There's still a lot of variables. A lot of them are, you know, are we going to do really, really good or just really good? So, you know, a lot of reason to be optimistic about things, but there's going to be a lot of activity in the next year. And I think what will be interesting, Kyle, will be to kind of peek around the corner beyond that year and a half and see what it looks like. Jamie Dimon today, or when was that, Monday, Tuesday, whatever, talking about, you know, his comments running the biggest bank in the world, just talking about how this thing may last till 2023. Well, I'm fascinated by what the world looks like in 2023 and beyond. So yeah, a lot of optimism. Certainly we're going to see some interesting results in the next year and a half too. But what does the world look beyond that? And what does it have in store for markets and valuations and where we go from here? A lot of stuff. I think it's going to be a fascinating couple of years.
You know, I think one of the things that struck me over the past couple of weeks is seeing just how quickly we've returned to things like travel. We've returned to the movie theaters and to restaurants. And certainly we're not back to where we were year over year. The comparisons aren't fair. You go back to April 14th of last year, we bottomed at something called TSA traveler traffic. So that's how many people are coming through airports through those TSA checkpoints. On that day, it was 84,000 people. I'm sorry, 87,000 people. Now, as of mid-March, we were already surpassing 1 million people going through TSA checkpoints. And so that's certainly well below where we were pre-pandemic. But when we talk about some of the concerns that the exploding growth in certain areas are causing, you know, there's demand for service sector stuff that we haven't seen in a very long time. And there's some questions about how the service sector, that part of the economy is going to respond. Joel, that showed up in the Institute for Supply Management this week.
Yeah, Kyle. So we had numbers for the month of March, and the ISM does a monthly survey, and it grew at the fastest rate ever in the years that it's been measuring this. And it's, you know, 10 months in a row that it's been growing. So we've not only got a trend there, but we've got like the fastest growing rate ever. But there are surveys of supply chain managers, you know, within that survey, and they expressed concerns that maybe they're growing too fast, as you said. I mean, that maybe their capacity can't keep up, or maybe they won't be able to get all the materials that they need, or the people that they need to carry through, what they're doing. I've heard that the TSA, for instance, has a major hiring campaign going on, because since that last April 14th, a year ago number, they lost a lot of agents, and they're having to hire back.
You know, and as we look at some of the inflation concerns that maybe crop up from that, we got numbers on wholesale inflation, maybe not the service sector side of things, but the more manufacturing industrial side of things.
Yeah, those numbers came out today from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And again, you know, if we look at it on a year-to-year basis, the producer price index is what they call it, was up 4.2%. from a year ago. And that's the fastest, you know, year of inflation that we've seen since September of 2011. So almost 10 years. Now, a couple of caveats to that is, you know, I know that you talk about the transient sort of inflation that's going on, that, you know, maybe over raising concerns about prices going up. In the case of the PPI, the price for gasoline just, you know, since February was up 8.8%. That did a lot to inflate that number. Also, if you think of, you know, the fastest inflation since 10 years ago, consider how little inflation we've really had in the last 10 years. So although that may sound alarming, a high month, you know, once every 10 years, and in between, you don't really have that much of an inflation.
Adding to that, just a little anecdotally, I was talking to a friend of mine who works in product sourcing and supply chain, just to kind of see, you know, we talk about inflation a lot. We talk about these squeezes on the production side. And I was just talking to her about how does that actually play out in what she does. And, you know, the big thing of that is of her concern right now is paper and boxes is the number one thing that she's been having a hard time with pricing and sourcing. And it just goes to show that, you know, even though we're seeing that crunch, the big thing is just getting the products out to people. And so it'll be interesting to see how that starts to play out in the numbers as we go forward.
That's actually a good point and fits in with, you know, the discussion before about what's happening long term. Because in the short term, you know, we're seeing the economy recover, but it's not even, you know, I mean, some parts of the economy are going great guns. Others are lagging behind, you know, some places were having shortages, others were not. So you hope that over the long term, the tide lifts all boats, but that's not the case, you know, on a month to month basis.
Well, and I think it's always good to consider both sides of the story, you know? So if I tell you, if we spend some time on this show talking about anecdotal supply chain problems or inflationary problems, it doesn't mean that we're saying they're going to be huge problems over the long run. It does say that we ought to pay attention to that. I mean, Paige, to your point, Kimberly Clark announced across the board price increases. You know, I haven't seen a PR announcement like that in a long time. I mean, for those of us that were around in the 70s and the 80s, we'd get seven or eight of those a day, some big corporation announcing they're just dropping, it's not dropping, dropping price increases across the board. And I'm not saying that that one price increase is noteworthy. I am saying that I have a bunch of anecdotal stories to tell about supply chain problems, and you're seeing some inflation right now, whether that's temporary and transient, you know, we'll find out over the long run, but it's worth paying attention to because you don't know, you know?
Kyle, you spent some time on the show last week actually talking about how some inflation is good. And you know, I mean, if you're a shareholder of a company like Kimberly Clark and they're raising prices, that might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, let's remember that Kimberly Clark is a publicly traded company that you can invest in. And so if you own shares of that firm or any of the firms like it, when prices go up, it's a reflective of the fact that their input costs are going up as well. But it also potentially means that they can pull in a little more profit. And so if they can find ways to make a little money in addition to just keeping up with their input costs, shareholders benefit from that. And so I think, you know, that's an important consideration. The other, you know, I think important thing as we look at kind of what's going on in the economy right now is, you know, this whole shipping issue that's been going on, whether it's ships piling up in ports, whether it's ships turning sideways in the Suez Canal, or I think, you know, what maybe is reflected in some of the data this week, Joel, is that we're starting to see shipping containers even pile up in certain parts of the world because there's been so much flow of goods coming from other places, particularly here into the U.S., and we saw that in trade deficit numbers this week.
That's right. So we had numbers for February, and, you know, again, it's an all-time high or low, depending upon how you're looking at the chart for deficits. But you know, it's the biggest gap we've ever had. It's $71.1 billion. And part of that is, you know, what we're talking about the uneven growth in the economy and the economic recovery. The U.S. with, you know, its vaccines, with more openings, reopenings, with now, you know, more stimulus, is kind of growing at a faster rate than many of its trading partners. So, you know, that affects the trade deficit because at least for now, U.S. consumers are buying a lot of foreign made goods, and people in other countries can't afford or can't get the stuff that they want to get from us.
You know, it's fascinating too that some of this stuff is happening really before the increase in demand. Max, this data point's for you. I read yesterday where 10 million cases of beer were held up in that whole Suez Canal thing. You know, that really doesn't have anything to do with any permanent kind of disruption in the supply chain. But there are again stories throughout the country of GM shutting down plants this week because of the circuit board problems and stuff. So I think, you know, again, worth keeping our eyes on because, you know, perhaps there'll be issues that pass quickly. Perhaps they won't, but there's some interesting stuff going on though.
Sounds like a good weekend though.
Yeah.
Hopefully the locals were able to participate.
Oh my God. That's funny. Funny stuff.
Joel, we had some jobs data as well this week.
Yeah, now I've got the song, how many cases of beer on the boat going through
10
my
million.
Head.
10 million bottles of beer on the boat.
Yeah, Kyle, another you know, good news report on job openings. You know, we had the most job openings in February than we've had in a couple of years. We've got, you know, hiring going up. We've got layoffs and so on going down. But again, if you look at the longer picture of it, we're still 8.4 million jobs behind where we were a year ago. So, you know, yeah, let's keep the hiring up. Let's keep the job openings going, but we have to still make up for that deficit.
You know, I think we spend so much time talking about, you know, the pandemic. We spend so much time talking about the world that's changed because of the pandemic. I think sometimes that's fairly short-term focused in its nature, right? That, you know, when are we going to be rid of masks? When are we going to be able to get back out? Well, we're seeing that, okay, it's okay to go to baseball games again. It's okay to do things here and there. But I think the more important thing is that the result of this pandemic is going to have drastic impacts on the long term as well. You know, Brian, I know that's a conversation you and I have pretty regularly, but it's important for stock investors because you don't invest in stocks for what's going to happen in the next 3 months or 6 months. Yeah, the rest of this year looks like it's going to be great. But I think the reality is we invest in stocks because we think that 10 years from now, there's immense opportunity that isn't being priced into the market, even knowing what we know today, that things are going to get better. And so you look at, for example, what the pandemic has done to healthcare. Healthcare is an issue where for years we've talked about high inflation. We've talked about outcomes that, while they continue to improve, certainly don't keep pace with the cost of healthcare. And so you look at that and go, what kinds of things need to happen to change? Obviously, I think most importantly, and Brian, certainly feel free to weigh in on this, but most importantly is we need to take advantage of some of the technological innovation that has allowed us in so many other places to bring productivity.
Well, I think that kind of the two sides of the coin for me, Kyle, are, you know, if you start with the idea of earnings and the foundation of earnings, you go back to 2019, the S&P 500 delivered roughly $160 a share, right? 2022 now, the forecast is a little over 200. So give or take 25% growth over that three-year period. If you take out all the middle of COVID and everything that happened. So you kind of think, well, that's a pretty good chunk of earnings, but you can kind of see it coming and it kind of feels like that's pretty reasonable. The next part of it is, well, where do we go from there? You know, and then it's pretty hard to look out, but you know, the example that you and I kicked around earlier in the day when we were chatting, I got this new bed that has all this biometric stuff. So you think about the feedback loop you get now between the Apple Watch you have, or whatever that version of that in the future is. It measures your blood, measures your oxygen levels. It measures, you know, you get all this instantaneous feedback. You're sleeping for 6, 7, 8 hours a night. You're getting all kinds of feedback. I've heard people say they think that 70 to 80% of all chronic disease in this world is nutrition oriented. Well, what if as your body changed, it sent different signals to ask for different food types, you know, and that food, you know, the example you and I used was bananas, but, you know, you needed magnesium in your blood. So all of a sudden it triggered a buy order, looked at your refrigerator, see where your inventory was, sent an order to Whole Foods, got the delivery that night. You had a big case of bananas on your front step, you know, or even yet you got a made to order meal delivered to your house. It was based on your blood oxygen level at 9 o'clock in the morning. That stuff, you can see how it all might happen right now. You look at how the medical profession is delivering health services right now. And so much of it's over Zoom now, and this consolidation of medical records, you know, the human genome and all the science and research and it's just it's hard with the limited view of what we, of how we see the world right now to see, you know, kind of earnings beyond 200. But when you start to get in those conversations and you think of the productivity increases and you think of the way that information will change the way we live on a daily basis, you know, there's so much opportunity and so much optimism to get beyond that, that I think is just exciting. It's just an exciting time to live, you know?
And Brian, you know, earlier Kyle sent around American Funds came out with their 10 predictions over the next 10 years. And one of the main thing, or one of the points that they brought up is the idea of semiconductors. So, you know, right now that's the type of thing that you're going to see in communications. It's going to see, you're going to see it in your computers, those wearable, now in your bed, apparently it's also there as well. But just as we go forward, you know, just think about all the different applications that that same type of data collection and data analytics can play in the role of productivity, whether that be in how we decide where to invest in infrastructure,
right,
how we decide where to direct our resources for more industrial production, or how the government is spending the money. And so the more that we start to put those resources to different applications, the more we're going to see that productivity increase. And then, you know, it should be exponential from there if we figure out how to correctly capture and then use that data.
Well, just think of the impact on the way we work and the difference in our perceptions of the way we work just from the last year. You know, I've heard people say they think maybe we'll permanently disrupt 40% of the commercial real estate. That, you know, 40% of the people that worked in an office won't work in an office. I had a discussion with somebody the other day who lives on the West Coast who was interviewing for a job in Denver. You know, I mean, I don't, that didn't happen 3 years ago, let alone, you know. So, you know, the flexibility for people to take their skills throughout the country and not be disruptive in terms of where they're living or moving or whatever. I just, once you start to think beyond your, you know, the limitations of how you see the world today, there's so much interesting stuff going on. I think it's fascinating. And there's a lot of opportunity out there, you know.
You know, the conversation used to be about Internet 1.0 or Web 1.0, moving to, you know, Web 2.0 to Web 3.0. And I think all along the way, what you had was a group of people who were early adopters. And so those early adopters now are the ones who already have, you know, if they're a diabetic, they have a continual blood glucose monitor. If they're concerned about heart health, they have an Apple Watch that can do ECGs right, you know, in the moment. And while early adopters get some of those benefits, until we reach a critical mass with some of those technologies, you know, you don't have enough data to show, okay, what could we actually do with this? What does it really mean for the world at large for more people to have access to this technology? But the more people that start to adopt, you know, sensing beds and continual blood glucose monitors for diabetics and Apple Watches or some other heart monitor, the more we catch disease early and the more that medicine becomes less about trying to find disease and it becomes about trying to intervene in disease before it gets to a point where it becomes extremely costly. And so you look at, you know, kind of where we are today and what medicine looks like today. And, you know, I think, Brian, you rightfully point out, we can get to a point with data, whether it's through, you know, putting semiconductors in our refrigerators and semiconductors in our body in many cases with a lot of the technology that's out there, or, you know, whether it's just simply having more data available about, you know, what kinds of disease people should expect and how we treat it. You know, I think that makes medicine more affordable. It allows doctors to focus on, you know, what we like to call the higher good, right? The thing that they're most effective at doing and the thing that they're going to have the most impact doing. And so, you know, a lot of this, these were all trends that pre-COVID were developing. And all of a sudden we got to this environment where we were forced into some of it. Telehealth visits were a thing pre-COVID, but they weren't all that common. Well, I've had multiple doctor's visits for my children, for myself, where what would have taken a 20-minute drive to the doctor's office now takes me, you know, 2 minutes to log in. And candidly, I think the doctor has a better experience sometimes because they have all the information they need right at their fingertips rather than having to constantly look back. And so I think, you know, you look at all of the changes that were already happening, and we're starting to reach that critical mass now that we hadn't reached before.
And, you know, I think Kyle, you take it back to the business side of this too. You go, you know, aside from all the qualitative enhancements we might, you know, benefit from, I'm going to butcher the facts on this, but 50 years ago, we spent an inordinate amount of money on food over healthcare. And now we spend something like 3 to 4 times as much money on healthcare as we do on food. Well, if you could, again, make that a more efficient process, you know, it frees up money to go to other places, whether it's infrastructure or who knows. But there are, you know, these qualitative things that we're talking about right now can become very quantitative and very beneficial to the economy as well. And I think that's part of the exciting part of it. You know, when you start to take kind of this idea of conscious capitalism, and you start to see things that not only make the world better while they're making it more profitable, it could be a pretty exciting few years out of us.
Well, and think about all the energy politically that's expended on healthcare. Right. Healthcare is 1/6 of global GDP. So, you know, $1 in $6 that we essentially create as a global economy are spent in the healthcare field. And I think that tells you everything you need to know about why it is such an important conversation. But when you can reach a point where you can manage disease before it becomes so expensive, I think, you know, there's opportunity there. Even beyond healthcare, though, you know, as we look out 5 to 10 years at what the pandemic has done and the direction, again, candidly, that we were headed anyways in many regards, you know, Paige, you mentioned the semiconductor thing, Brian, the office space thing. I think there are a number of trends that had already started that, you know, I think as we look out 10 years, it's just going to add to corporate profitability. It's just going to add to the desire to want to own the stocks of some of the companies that are participating in those trends. And that's where all of this gets back to, you know, if you can get past the sometimes madness of the short term of the stock market. And there's different ways we can do that. And we talk about that all the time, you know, whatever balance means for you that allows you to get to the long term. But if you can get past the short term madness and start to really think about, okay, 10 years down the road, what are the opportunities? And why do we reasonably think that earnings can grow at 8 to 10% a year? It's these absolute conversations we're having right now. Yeah. Stocks look a little expensive right now. Yeah, it seems like maybe our earnings forecasts over the next few years are a bit rosy. But if you start to smooth some of that growth, if you start to look out over a long enough time period, I think you reach a point where you go, okay, there are some pretty significant reasons for optimism. We've got to be cautious as we look at the next 6 months, year, 3 years, whatever that time period is. Yeah, there are reasons for caution. But if you can get your mind around the idea that there is long-term opportunity, I think that helps you to be a better investor.
Well, and I think it's, again, go full circle and as we kind of round out the week. But all these optimistic things are worth paying attention to. And yet, it's, as I said earlier, it's also good to keep your side on the, you know, keep your sights on the other side of things. And so let's pay attention to inflation and pay attention to interest rates and supply chain stuff. And you know, we do have $27 trillion in debt. I bring that up sometimes and people get mad at me, but I'm not trying to bring everybody down here. I'm just trying to say, you know, hey, there's 10 good things and 4 bad things. Let's make sure we're all aware of them and keep balance, not only in your portfolio, but in your mindset so that you stay a independent kind of unbiased investor in the way you make decisions and go about your business. And I think in the long run, you're going to be a lot better off than kind of riding the herd, you know, and going with the momentum. So,
well, Brian, thank you for keeping us balanced today.
Yeah, being the mean guy, man, being the bad guy, right?
Not at all.
10 million cases, Max. It's a lot of beer.
It's a lot of beer.
Heck of a weekend. Take one down, pass it around.
If you are one of the lucky recipients of one of those 10 million cases, you have yourself a wonderful weekend. We do enjoy doing the program for you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.